FBI 94.5.
Walk her dog and then walking her dog. hotels and then I'm bumping into some other people having coffee and playing chess in front of a local cafe and we'll become friends and play frisbee and through them I'll meet someone else. And so on. This was a sort of a very slowly, organically growing network.
That sounds like a certain kind of discovery in the city where people are usually too busy to take much notice of.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a case in point. I'm someone who always overloads myself and so there's a constant struggle for me between getting things done and wanting to focus on the pleasure of doing those things.
And so the Shame Project was more focusing on the pleasure of doing those things than the money side.
It was a kind of trying to reverse engineer the way that I live my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it. Very inspiring indeed. And part of it was, this was obviously an art project, so it wasn't just about, there was bound to be some end output. What was the...
It wasn't a spectacular output. As I was going along day by day, I kept a blog and sort of write each day perhaps 1,000 to 2,000 words about the things that happened, who I met, what we did. The purpose of writing each and every day is that, over the course of one's life or a period of time, I forget the particular things that go into the building of a relationship or something. So if you put them down in writing day by day, you can go back later on and trace the development, which becomes quite fascinating. And in theory, and this is some work that I haven't yet done, I'll be able to go back and analyse that text and learn something about the way that people interact in neighbourhoods. And if that's too ambitious, at least something about myself.
And people can still read the blog.
Yeah, that's published at thesham.info.
It had a huge response. I think that you're underselling it a little bit. It seems like a lot of people all across Sydney, and probably outside of Sydney, but certainly all across Sydney, became quite addicted to it. Like, so you're also saying, oh, I'm just sort of writing some, writing down what happened each day, but it became quite, as I said, quite addictive for people sort of looking on each day and checking it out, and they're sharing your experiences and discovering a new area that they. Well, we haven't, discovered themselves because maybe they've got a patient very often, or maybe they just sort of don't think to look at the houses that they walk past every day and all the people that sit out the front and start to ask some questions. So I think that was actually, it sounds a lot bigger than you're perhaps selling it.
Oh, well, that's part of my, it's a humble style, I suppose. You're right, it is, writing a blog on an everyday basis is a little bit like writing your own television show, and the more that you regularly update it, the more people tune in and listen to it. It's quite surprising how, as soon as you stop regularly updating it, all those listeners just abandon you straight away.
We come back eventually. And you were talking with Lucas Eileen, who is a Sydney artist who wrote an interesting project a couple of months ago about being an artist in residency in his own neighbourhood in Petersham. It's called the Sham Project. And Lucas, you've also brought in some other pieces of not just music but other things that have inspired you to share with us this afternoon. What's the next thing you're going to hear?
We'll hear an excerpt from John Cage's Lecture on Nothing. Which is from 1949. It's actually, it is a lecture, but as we'll hear, I think in the text of the lecture is actually said that the lecture is composed in much the same way as John Cage composed a piece of music. And so I imagine that our listeners are fairly literate in the world of experimental music, but for those who don't know familiar with John Cage, he's most famous for his Silence piece, which is, I think it's called 4 minutes 33 seconds, which consists of 4 minutes 33 seconds of silence. And really allows the, when it's performed in a concert setting, it allows the squeaks of the chairs and the coughs of the audience and the scratching of noses and so on to be heard and to be allowed have the same level of importance as a chromatic scale in Mozart or something like that. So,
from the age of that right now, and there is nothing to say. If among you are those who wish to get somewhere, let them leave at any moment. What we require is silence. But what silence requires is that I go on talking. Give any one thought a push, and it falls down easily. pusher and the pushed produce an entertainment called a discussion. Shall we have one later? Or we could simply decide not to have a discussion. Whatever you like. But now there are silences, and the words make, help make the silences. I have nothing to say, and I am saying it. And that is poetry, as I need it. This space of time is organized. We need not fear these silences. We may love them. This is a composed talk, for I am making it just as I make a piece of music. It is like a glass of milk. We need the glass, and we need the milk. Or again, it is like an empty glass, into which, at any moment, anything may be poured. As we go along, who knows, an idea may occur in this talk.
And was the idea would be
no idea.
Well, I guess I wanted you to play that bass because it brings quite explicitly one of John Cage's ideas about life and art. In that, I think I'm not sure if he said it in that scene or not, but he might say it later, that structure without life is dead, but life without structure is invisible. So, and then he also mentioned something in there about the glass into which anything can be poured. And for me, in terms of my model of art practice, this has been something that's kind of rattled around my brain for quite a few years now. The idea of creating a structure within which anything can happen. So rather than trying to direct the activities, for example, within the Shannon project, instead, I just set up a structure which is 2 months, and each day I'll write something every single day. And beyond that, there is no plan, and whatever happens becomes the project.
Even if you have an equal point five for chatting with Lucas and Eileen about life, about art, about the Vision Project, which you can check out online at theshman.info. And Lucas, I guess you can kind of just always apply those ideas to life generally, but what's next then? If you're taking these ideas, where are you going to take them to next year?
Well, I'm not really sure. You know, a lot of my projects come from a kind of a wave question. So, for example, before I did the Petersham project, I did a similar project in a small country town in Western Australia with 2 months writing a blog every day. And it was at the end of that project that the what-if question came up. What if I was to do this instead of a small country town, if I was to do this in my own neighbourhood? So the next what-if question hasn't really arisen for me yet, and sometimes these things take a while to filter through, but I'm quite patient.
And is it also maybe a what-if, it seems to be a theme of community within some of your work, is there some kind of project you're doing a more collaborative thing, like maybe inspiring other people to go and participate in their communities and serve?
It'd be interesting to know that's how
it's done to collaborate.
Yeah, well, there's a really good question there. The issue of the community is such a big and fraught one, and people use the word, misuse and abuse that word so often without really considering what it possibly can mean. So one of the projects I'm working on at the moment is reading about the concept of the community in order to try and beef up how intelligently I can think and talk about that sort of thing. I'm also involved with the Petition Bowling Club, which is a kind of a community, because the bowling club itself is in crisis, so I'm helping them with their, pretty much not necessarily with their core organisational structure, but with the communications and things, so I'm making a website for them. And that's a community of people who live in but it's more a kind of open space issue. And I was quite fascinating because here you have a whole lot of people who otherwise maybe have nothing in common except perhaps they speak English and they work in, generally I'd say they work in creative industries rather than, say, factories or things like that. But this is the thing that's drawing them together, and they're really learning as they go about how to collaboratively.
I'm hearing more about the Venetian Bowling Club and working collaboratively with the city in just a second. Mr. Lucas Allen, right now we're going to take a musical adventure and go to...
probably 1989, I would say, this track. It's Infinity 90s, Time for the Guru by Guru Josh.
Here on API 84.5.
Very timely, Guru Josh. session in 1390s. His message there is 1990s, time for the guru. In other words, in the coming couple of years, it's going to be my time. And in a way, he was absolutely right, because he had his moment and then vanished from sight.
And now he's back.
Well, he's back only because I've finished the curriculum. I want to thank my friends Vanessa and Tim for bringing Guru Josh to my attention, because apparently the story goes that Guru Josh was a big public supporter of the Tories in the UK around the time when Infinity 1990s came out. And in essence, it killed his career, because the Tories had a very anti-rave policy. The people who wouldn't otherwise have supported his music abandoned him, and he sunk into the depths of obscurity.
And I would imagine also that the Tories wouldn't have been really that encouraging of rave music and of warehouse parties, and, you know, because rave music is kind of dependent on a certain not being very legal.
No, they had a completely anti-rave position.
So that sort of seems like quite a weird tension between...
Well, you can really tell from the lyrics of Infinity 1990s, Time for the Guru, that Guru Josh perhaps isn't one of our most eloquent statesmen and speechwriters. So perhaps that's the reason.
Where is he now? Someone knows what Guru Josh is doing now. Like, maybe he is a speechwriter. Maybe he is actually, the backbone of...
Yeah, he might be a member of Parliament.
He could well be. I think that what Guru Josh is doing right now, I think they'll 3999 give us a call, so if you want to take a message and let us know exactly what Guru Josh is doing. And now, as we were chatting a second ago, you're telling us a little bit about the Pennish and Bowling Club and some of your work you're doing there now as part of the expansion of the Sham project, like maybe or some kind of development of it, or some side step of it. What's happened with the Pennish and Bowling Club? Like, what's the big issue?
Maybe you're right to say that it's an expansion of my project, because it's important to me that although the project might have definite timelines for the project per se, it then resonates and bleeds back into my everyday life, which is clearly what differentiates this space in residence from one which I might do in Milan, for instance, where when you leave, it's so far away, it's hard for it to continue on. So, so the Pennish and Bowling Club, like many bowling clubs around Sydney, is really struggling with its, the bottom line financially. Bowling is not, even bowling bowls has really dropped off the agenda for many people. And the clubs are starting to reinvent themselves. There's that whole deaf bowling phenomenon, there's the whole renovation and revamping as a gourmet food venue and things like that. It's no different really. The Pennish Club is having to grapple with that. And I haven't really looked into the way those other clubs have dealt with their problems, but I am fascinated with the fact that the Pennish Club revival or the rally to sort of say that is being driven by residents in the surrounding neighbourhood.
Everyone could maintain a claim on this space.
So probably a lot of them have arrived in the last 10 years, and when the club was there, and they thought, well, I want the neighbourhood to be moved into, because this beautiful, quite open space is a threat to their the lifestyle that they thought that they would have.
Is it maybe a little bit like a library? You don't necessarily go and use it very often, but you like the fact that it's there, and if you want to be able to use it, it's there for you to use.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, because a library is only made possible, it's a non-financially viable institution, and so it can work on it to operate on that model, whereas a bowling club needs to turn it back. So that's one of the differences between a library and a bowling club. This good intention to use it every now and again, and I like the fact that it's there, isn't enough
to keep it sustained. Lucas, thank you very much for coming in and sharing some of your insights into your art and into how you interact with your place in your community. Thank you very much. It's quite inspiring. And if you want to check out Lucas's beautiful project, you can go to the sham.info and read the blog. It is actually hilariously funny and very insightful. So thank you, Peter. Thank you, Peter. I'm going to change your name. It's actually with us, Eileen. We're at FBI 94.5, and we're going to go with one last thing.
Yeah, it's a track by Smog, one of my favourites, called...
stranger. Yeah, I think he's sort of going like a soldier. Sorry.